There is no longer any such thing as a typical family. This headline was published by Time magazine in 2014. Has the traditional family unit, or any family unit at all for that matter, become obsolete? Like it or not, there is no debate that the structure of the average family is very different than 50, 25, or even 10 years ago when this headline was written. The article begins by establishing the common sentiment of today's society towards the traditional family unit. Pretty much everyone agrees that the era of the nuclear family has declined to the point of no return. The big question is, what is replacing it? Now, a new study suggests that nothing is, or rather, that a whole grab bag of family arrangements are. While many seem excited about replacing the so-called outdated and obsolete family structure with a grab bag of countless options, the real questions are far too frequently brushed aside. Yes, society's view of family is changing, but at what cost? At what cost to the individuals immediately affected, especially children? And at what cost to humanity as a whole? Can we retain our society while removing one of its core foundations, the family? On today's edition of Tomorrow's World, we'll see the side effects of removing the traditional family structure and ask why there is such a determined effort to continue down this destructive path. Stay tuned as we examine the true value of family. Welcome to Tomorrow's World. The statement that the structure of North American families is changing at a rapid pace likely does not surprise you. You don't need to go far to see examples of the change in structure in the world all around us. You don't even need to leave your own home to see drastic changes in families pictured on modern television shows and movies. As we will see later in the program, the family has been the chief building block of society throughout history, and we are currently in the midst of the largest social experiment ever undertaken. Can society survive without family? Can we simply change the definition of family without having dramatic and far-reaching effects? It can be easy to see the changes around us and think, live and let live. Someone else's living arrangements don't affect me. Perhaps on an individual level, this may have some merit. However, if the traditional family structure has been the bedrock of society, how many strong families does it take to maintain that society? Many are undecided if these changes are for the better. It's natural to want a pause to see how these changes are working out. Frankly, it can be easy to think that we are at the tail end of these changes as what could possibly come next. Researchers who study the structure and evolution of the American family express unsullied astonishment at how rapidly the family has changed in recent years. The transformations often exceeding or capsizing those same experts' predictions of just a few journal articles ago. Keep in mind, that was written 10 years ago. Not only were we still very much in the midst of it, it has accelerated in ways few of us could have imagined. Just as these changes did not stop or slow down 10 years ago, there is no indication that they will anytime soon. As we discuss some of the ways the family unit has changed, I think it's important to emphasize that we are not against all change. Change is not always a bad thing. We cannot pretend that the 1950s or 1920s or any other decade for that matter were perfect and the ideal situation to which we should return. Change can be a positive. The right changes can bring fantastic results. But when changes to something as fundamental as the family unit occur, we can't be naive and think that they occur without effect. We have to look at the side effects of these changes, side effects which all too often have been relegated to fine print and brushed aside, and decide if these changes are a positive or a negative. The 2016 census in Canada paints a picture of the current state of families. In the opening of today's program, I quoted a Time magazine article which described a grab bag of new family arrangements. The statement actually minimizes one of the biggest issues. Grab bag of arrangements implies that people are creating family arrangements. It may surprise you to learn that in Canada, the most common household arrangement is no family arrangement at all. For the first time in the country's history, the number of one-person households has surpassed all other types of living situations. They accounted for more than 28.2% of all households last year, more than the percentage of couples with children, couples without children, single-parent families, multiple family households, and all other combinations of people living together. The same census also reveals the rising common law relationships in place of marriage that 19.2% of children aged 14 and under are growing up in single-parent households, while 30% are living in non-traditional family arrangements. This is just a glimpse of the changes occurring all around us. But what are the ramifications of devaluing the traditional family structure on the individuals directly involved, as well as for the whole of society? Before I go on, it's important to underscore the point that the statistics and information we'll be looking at are broad and general statements. The fact that in most cases being raised by two biological parents is ideal does not nullify the fact that there are single mothers, single fathers, stepfathers and stepmothers, adopted parents, foster parents, grandparents, and others who have done a tremendous job of making the most out of a less than ideal situation. However, we also can't fall into the trap of viewing all scenarios as equal. Take, for example, this finding from the Administration on Children and Families. The latest National Incidence Report from the Administration on Children and Families found that children living with their married, biological parents had the lowest rates of abuse across all the categories of maltreatment studied. Again, this is not to say that all or even most step-parents or individuals living with their common-law partner's children are abusive, or that abuse does not occur in homes boasting both biological parents. But the difference here is actually quite staggering. Compared to children living with married biological parents, those whose single parent had a live-in partner had more than 8 times the rate of maltreatment overall, over 10 times the rate of abuse, and nearly 8 times the rate of neglect. The traditional family structure is the safest. It's also the healthiest, according to a study performed at Rice University. Research shows that children living in a traditional two-parent married household are less likely to be obese, with a 17% obesity rate, than children living with cohabitating parents, who have a 31% obesity rate. The obesity rate for children in non-traditional families is nearly double. Sometimes I find myself struck by how scientific studies can prove something that had already been generally assumed to be true for centuries, yet state it as if it's some sparkling new revelation. Some find it shocking when traditional values are determined to actually have value. For reasons we cannot fully measure, there appears to be something about people who marry and have a child that is fundamentally different than the other groups. Yes, there is something fundamentally different and wonderful about the marriage relationship that is a tremendous benefit to the children raised in such a household. And lest anyone accuse the study of bias, the higher rates for non-traditional parent families were observed even after researchers accounted for factors associated with childhood obesity, including diet, physical activity, and socioeconomic status. It should be noted that many of the articles I'm quoting from today include a similar statement. When these facts are brought out, many will try to argue that those suffering from economic hardship are less likely to have the money for a big, expensive wedding. And so all these stats really just show the benefits of being born to parents who are better off financially. Most of these studies accounted for socioeconomic status, and yet the results were the same. The benefits to the children were not proportional to the lavishness of the wedding ceremony. They were the result of a lifetime commitment between the parents. There is a new term that has been coined to describe much of what we've been talking about: two-parent privilege. Sadly, I think they've chosen that phrase because privilege seems to have become a derogatory term for any supposedly unearned benefits. Unearned by the child, perhaps, but what parent wouldn't want their child to have the benefit of starting off with advantages, of having privilege? Two-parent privilege is not a factor that you have no control over. Providing your children with two-parent privilege is a choice and a commitment. Some will argue, I can be both the mother and the father to my child. I can provide them everything that they need. Vox.com will never be confused with a conservative media outlet, but it describes the benefits of two-parent households as common sense. There is a common sense reason to why this bump is so great. A pair of mediocre married parents will have way more time to spend with their kids than even an exceptionally devoted single dad. Someone has to do the laundry after all, and only one of these families has a spare parent around to read to the kids while the other cleans the clothes. The traditional family structure is safer, promotes better health, and increases the likelihood of career and educational success. The benefits of strong families don't end with the family itself. In the next portion of our program, we'll see the significant impact strong families have on society and the devastating effects of the current decline. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about our special report, The Future of the Family. This report includes 6 articles and a 2-page stats sheet examining the current status of the family unit and proposing a better path forward. Articles include Don't Underestimate the Value of Family, Motherhood in Crisis, and Fatherless Families. Welcome back. We've just touched on the rapid pace at which the traditional family structure is changing. We've seen that the benefits of being a part of a traditional family unit are immense. We've been looking at general trends, understanding, of course, that there are many out there who have succeeded despite being in less than ideal circumstances, and those who have failed despite being in a positive environment. Yet the evidence speaks for itself in terms of providing a safe, healthy environment to promote success and discourage crime and drug use. Family does matter. It's my sincere hope that those watching will recognize the importance of family, especially younger viewers who may be wondering if marriage is a worthwhile endeavor or what environment may be best to raise children. You are at the precipice, facing some of the most important decisions that will affect not only you for the rest of your life, but any potential children you may have for the rest of their lives as well. I hope you'll take these findings to heart. But what if you aren't in such a situation? The question may be arising in your mind, does family matter for me? If you live in and interact with the society around you, then the changes that are occurring are going to impact you in just about every way. Maclean's magazine hints at the magnitude of what is at stake. Marriage may not matter as much as it once did to young couples, but it matters a lot to society at large. Married couples are a foundation of the economy. They earn, save, and spend more than their unmarried counterparts. They are happier. And a mountain of evidence shows stable 2-parent families are good for kids. Children who grow up in a married family are far more likely to succeed in school, find employment, and avoid problems later in life than those raised in other situations, however loving. Deseret News compiled a list of many of the benefits we've already examined, but it's helpful to review them, this time thinking about how increasing the number of youth who fit this description will make for a better society at large. More secure financially. Do better in school and are less likely to drop out. Less prone to experience anxiety and depression. Less likely to take drugs or become addicted to alcohol. Less likely to experience sexual abuse and domestic violence. Less likely to commit crimes and be in the juvenile justice system. Less likely to engage in risky sexual behavior, thus avoiding sexually transmitted diseases and unwanted pregnancies. The article goes on to highlight that these are not trends that we can ignore as someone else's problem. Many of society's most pressing problems, such as suicide, drug abuse, crime, violence, school dropouts, homelessness, etc., can be largely attributed to the deteriorating family safety net that used to protect family members from experiencing such ills. Government and other organizations are often left to clean up the mess that our families have wrought. Writing for the New York Times, a former United States Secretary of Education, William Bennett, reiterates the benefits reaped by a society with strong families. "I am the product of divorce and several stepfathers, but I still believe in the importance of the traditional family, not because of Dan Quayle or Leave It to Beaver, but because of the facts and the record. The family is the nucleus of civilization and the basic social unit of society. If we have stronger families, we will have stronger schools, stronger churches, and stronger communities with less poverty and less crime. The family is the linchpin of society, both economically and socially. The family is the nucleus of civilization." That is an interesting comment, and the word nucleus is a perfect summation of the family's value. Society is dependent on relationships. Our ability to sympathize with, relate to, and sometimes simply tolerate our neighbors, coworkers, friends, and acquaintances enable society to develop and thrive. The most basic human relationships are found in the family. We learn how to work together, how to overcome disagreements, how to forgive. We learn how to encourage and instruct. We learn how and when to lead or to defer. Strong family relationships also allow us to build larger community networks, as you are brought into contact not only with those you normally interact with, but some members of your immediate family members' network. Picture a family with three young children. Each child has a network of friends they interact with on a daily basis at school. From time to time, each child brings friends home who then interact with their siblings. If the middle child is bringing home a friend, the youngest child is learning how to interact with older non-related children. And the older child is learning to interact with younger non-related children. The middle child is learning how to host and how to be a conduit for the expanding relationships. Likewise, when mom and dad invite other adults over for dinner, the children gain experience relating to non-related adults. Each of these instances allows children to develop and foster relationship skills with the family, forming not only the earliest grounds, but also the basis for expanding their own personal relationship networks. Learning to interact with people beyond our immediate peer group is a skill which appears to be in decline. This change is further fueled by social media, where someone can opt out of interacting with those physically close to them in order to find someone more like them to interact with. These relationship skills are a forgotten casualty of the war on families. The family relationship is the first intimate relationship of your life, and you apply what you learn to later relationships. It's also where you may learn how to constructively communicate, or perhaps the inverse, to yell and scream when you have a disagreement. Those are the skills you learn from the family, and you will apply in later relationships. Another key component of the traditional family structure is longevity. Peer groups change over the course of our lives. As individuals grow older and their life situations change, people come in and out of their lives. This is a gigantic flaw in the growing movement of family is whoever we choose it to be. If you are simply choosing who your family is, there remains the choice for them to no longer be family. Obviously, marriage is a choice, but when done properly, that choice is accompanied by a lifelong commitment. You've likely heard not to bring up politics or religion at a family dinner. You and the other members of your family may not see eye to eye on these topics. When we disagree with acquaintances, it can be normal to distance ourselves and to avoid situations where those topics may come up. We tend to like spending time with those who agree with us. Family ties should be more difficult to sever. Being a part of a family unit means learning when and how to disagree with someone. Knowing when a topic should be left alone or certain conversations should be left to a more appropriate time. We learn to get over things, to overcome differences, and to work with people who may not agree with us, even on some very important topics. It's no coincidence that the decline of the family unit and the increasing polarization of society have come hand in hand. When people don't know how to disagree with each other, every opposing viewpoint becomes an irreconcilable difference, and people withdraw into their own network of whoever agrees with their beliefs at the current time. Are you fed up with the increased polarization we're seeing in the world around us? The decline of the family unit has played a vital role in that change. When we return, we'll view some interesting studies showing how people view the traditional family structure and complaints from researchers at a top university that one vital aspect of the decline of the family unit is being overlooked. Lastly, we'll look to the Bible, which outlined millennia ago the true value of the family. But before we continue, I want to extend to you another opportunity to get your copy of our special report, The Future of the Family. It includes the article, Rebuilding Happy Families, showing how you can work to improve your family situation and strengthen your family. On today's program, we are examining the value of family. We've seen overwhelming evidence that the traditional family structure is vital in establishing a safe, healthy environment for children. We've also seen how the family unit acts as the basic building block of society. The world is already feeling the effects of ignoring the importance of the traditional family. One can only imagine what the future holds if the next generation places even less importance on family relationships. Considering what we've discovered, It may come as a surprise that so many people view these changes with ambivalence or outright support. The report I referenced earlier from the Pew Research Center on the rise of new families even included a bullet point in its executive summary: an ambivalent public. The public's response to changing marital norms and family forms reflects a mix of acceptance and unease. On the troubled side of the ledger, 7 in 10, or 69%, say the trend toward more single women having children is bad for society. And 61% say that a child needs both a mother and father to grow up happily. Relatively few say any of these trends are good for society, but many say they make little difference. 39% don't believe that a child needs both a mother and a father. The statement that really stands out to me is the takeaway at the end. Few will say that they are good for society, but that it's not really that important. In fact, many dismiss the evidence we've shown as only being relevant for children, and that once we are adults, the need for family is minimized and can be replaced by close friends. While that may work for some in theory, the research shows that it is not fulfilling the needs in reality. In conducting its study, the Pew Research Center asked, "Suppose someone you know had a serious problem and needed either financial help or caregiving. How obligated would you feel to provide assistance if that person were your?" And the relations asked about include parent, grown child, grandparent, brother or sister, spouse or partner's parent, grown stepchild, stepparent, step or half-sibling, and finally, best friend. Best friend finished last on the list, with only 39% saying they would feel very obligated to provide assistance. Compare that to 64% for brother or sister, 77% for grown child, or 83% for parent. It seems the family relationship truly is different. When examining the change in family structure over the past several decades, the change in the role and sadly the presence of the father is one of the most obvious. Yet it is one whose ramifications we are studying the least. Consider this remark from ScienceDaily.com. Previous attachment research has demonstrated the importance of the mother-infant relationship to children's emotional development. But there is still relatively little research on the role of the fathers, the marital relationship, and the family as a whole. A result of the increase of children being raised solely by their mothers is that most of the focus has been on the role that mothers play in raising children. Their role is vital and must not be overlooked. But it certainly appears as though much of this is being done to justify the current trend rather than examining the best path forward. Again, mothers are essential, but let's notice this quote regarding a study showing that parenting research often overlooks fathers. "Despite robust evidence of fathers' impact on children and mothers, engaging with fathers is one of the least well-explored and articulated aspects of parenting interventions." The last book of the Old Testament, in its final few verses, contains a stern warning as well as a message of hope. It indicates that there will be a desperate need for healing the relationships between family members. It also indicates that there will be a source issuing a cry to revive the family unit. At the end of the book of Malachi, "Before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, and he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with a curse." It seems that the fact that society is impacted by the strength or weaknesses of the family unit was known centuries ago. The reality is that right from creation, it is clear that man was built to excel within a family structure. The second chapter of Genesis contains the well-known story of God using Adam's rib to create Eve. The language makes clear that Adam was longing for companionship. But for Adam, there was not found a helper comparable to him. Adam's reaction was pure elation when God brought Eve to him. He immediately recognized the importance of their relationship, the creation of the first human family. What value does God place on the family unit? He saw fit to ensure that two of the Ten Commandments, 20% of the most basic and fundamental aspect of his law, are directed at maintaining the family unit. Honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not commit adultery. Perhaps you did not have the benefit of growing up with a positive parental example and aren't quite sure what that looks like. The Bible contains a fountain of information describing principles which can help you to be a better father, mother, brother, sister, husband, wife, son, or daughter. It can help you prepare for a future family if that's something you're seeking after. In recent decades, the family unit has come under attack. This is not to belittle anyone who finds themselves in a less than ideal situation, but family does matter. It's the bedrock of society and the linchpin of successful communities. Family is the best environment for raising children and shaping future generations. The relationship between family and the religion described in the Bible is one of significant importance. The two support each other in tremendous ways. The family unit also contains vital clues to God's overall plan. But that is a much larger topic than we have time to go into now. Our special report, The Future of the Family, contains an article titled, God is Creating a Family that You Won't Want to Miss Out On. From all of us here at Tomorrow's World, thank you for tuning in. We hope you've enjoyed the program and that you've found it to be profitable. Tune in next time as Gerald Weston, Stuart Bohavich, and I will continue to bring the wonderful news of tomorrow's world. I hope you enjoyed this video. If you'd like to see more, be sure to subscribe and click the notification bell. If you want to help others find our content, hit the like button and share.